Hi, can I speak to Todd Hancock, please?
Yeah, speaking.
Hi, it's Danko Jones calling. We had a scheduled interview at 11:30.
You bet.
Well, Eastern Standard Time.
Yeah, Danko, man, thank you so much for calling up here in Vancouver, Canada.
Yeah, so it's, what is it, 8:30?
It's 8:30 in the morning. Yeah, it's been many years since we last spoke. I would guess it's probably been in the neighborhood of, like, 8 to 10 years. It was certainly back when I was doing the afternoon show and the 6 o'clock rock report at CFOX.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool.
Been a long time, man. So thank you so much. It's nice to have you make the jump over to the podcast.
All right, cool.
Let's go back to the beginning for this. Before you were in any bands, what was the music in your house as a kid growing up? Like, what's the music your parents are exposing you to?
They didn't really have the same taste in music.
Right.
My mom liked, you know, James Last and Richard Clayderman and these schmaltzy piano players.
Wow.
That's what she dug. Don Ho, Nana Mouskouri.
Wow. What's taking you down that rock path then, if it's not your mom? Like, who's the influence in that direction?
Oh, well, I'm an only child, so it's just me. I
liked
Kiss when I was a kid.
Yeah,
so,
of course.
So I liked Kiss because I saw them on magazines and TV every now and then. You would see the images when you're going through the shopping mall. So I just asked my mom kept bugging my mom to get me a Kiss album. And then she finally relented. She got me Kiss Alive. And and I didn't know if I liked the music because I was 6 years old. But there's an address on the back of Kiss Alive, which was, I think it was called the Kiss Fan Club or Kiss Fan Mail.
Yeah.
And so I wrote to that address, and then I don't know how long it took, but in a few weeks or maybe a few months, I can't remember, I was six, I got a package from Kiss, and that pretty much made me a lifetime fan.
So
that's where it was, and Kiss Alive was the album that was the thickest in the bin, and it had a booklet, and it was a double album, so I knew I only had one shot at this, because I knew my mom wasn't going to get me another thing, another album. So I got two albums, and for the price of one, for the price of one chance,
mm-hmm.
And my parents got really worried, because I just kept listening to the album, and then they just threw it out. My dad broke it over his knee and threw it out, and that really made me a fan, so of rock music in general. But I did find that, you know, maybe a Kiss attracted a lot of kids, and a lot of them, once they heard the music, they didn't like it, but I liked it. So, or maybe it's just I was so impressionable, anything I heard at that time I would have liked. But, I mean, I heard a lot of other musics at that time, too, like, you know, the Bee Gees and disco and pop music and all kinds of, you know, dance music or whatever. And I loved rock music.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Isn't it incredible? Like, think back to, you know, when you're six and they're sending out, they've essentially, what they've done back in the 70s is they had a social media presence before there was even an internet.
Well, the thing about that is that's different than it is now is, my mom never sent any money. I wrote a letter because she just wanted me to get me writing letters.
Right.
To encourage my letter writing, which I eventually did more of, and I realized if you write a letter to somebody, and it was amazing getting a response for a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Getting mail was back then like it was like Christmas. So I wrote all these letters, but writing to Kiss was like one of the first letters I ever wrote, and because I got a response, it really spurred me to write more. And the one thing is, we never sent any money. My mom never sent any money. That address doesn't ask you to send anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I still got, who was it, 5, like, 8x10 glossies, and I got 2 school folders.
Wow.
And this is all for free.
Wow.
Now they charge you, what is it, $6,000 for the Kiss experience?
Yeah. Yeah, right, the VIP, the meet and greets. What's your take on that? Like, do you do that as well, or are you, you know, once you've sold out a venue?
No, you can see me. If I'm walking around after dinner before the show, you could probably find me.
Come shake your hand.
I mean, it's not like that.
Yeah.
We're not at that level. right. obviously.
Well, even if you did get to that level, like, I don't know, man. I'm still not sold on the, like, you've already paid to get in the venue. You've supported, you've hopefully bought the album. You haven't ripped it off or whatever. It just feels weird to me to make your fans pay to meet you. It just feels weird.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. It goes against what I kind of grew up as bands, you know, like punk rock, getting into punk rock and even certain metal bands. They were so accessible. To fork over cash to meet them now is weird. But,
right.
you know, a lot of bands are doing it. Bands like Kiss at that level
They're all doing it. 90% yeah. are doing it, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, it's cool. I don't know, you know, I've been doing this band and been in the music industry for a few decades now, and I have a different perspective on it. I suppose if I, you know, just was out of the industry and I had a different kind of job, and I used going to shows and seeing bands as something that I did on my leisure time with my disposable income, maybe I would do it. I don't know. Because I wouldn't be able to see them or meet them any other way. For me, I mean, being in the industry or for people in the industry, you can meet them if you try hard enough, if you really want to. It's hard for me to pass judgment on it. I personally don't feel comfortable doing that for our band. I prefer you just come to the show. That'd be great. If we happen to meet, then there you go. If not, well, maybe next time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What was your first concert?
I think it was Metallica. Wow. I get asked this every now and then, and to be honest, I don't really remember, but it was Metallica. But if you were to go back, I guess it was John Denver.
John Denver, wow, okay.
Yeah.
By the way, I got the album stream, Rock Supreme, coming out Friday, April 26th.
Mm-hmm.
You must be obviously ready to push that out to your fans. Sometimes you sit on records for months. That's not uncommon, right?
No, it's not. I mean, you got to get the artwork ready and the videos ready, and you have to let everybody listen to it so they can talk to you about it. So sometimes it does take months. Sometimes you finish the record, but you don't have a deal, so you have to find a deal. Lots of reasons why.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Does it get any easier to make the record? Was this album number 9? 10,
it's the 9th studio album and the 12th album of original material. We have three other compilation albums of B-sides and unreleased tracks and stuff like that. So there's three of those out there and 9 official studio albums.
Right. And has your muse changed over the years, or has the same kind of things driven you creatively when it comes to music?
Yeah, pretty much the same stuff. I mean, I'm lucky that I like the music we play.
Right.
So it's easy to get into it and be energized by it, and I still have an antenna as to when I'm listening to a good riff or a riff that I like. So,
mm-hmm.
And it's not hard. I mean, lyrically, we sing about the same themes. So, I mean, it gets to be kind of an art form in terms of, you know, you're working within real tiny confines. And that's definitely a challenge, whereas most see it as like, oh, you know, they're just retreading the same old themes, and, you know, they're playing the same old music. Well, you try doing it like,
right, if it's so easy, then why don't you do it then, if it's so easy?
Yeah, it's like try and make it fresh, and I think this album is like completely fresh. Like, it doesn't sound, I mean, there's rock bands out there that their first album or second album, and it just sounds so stock. It's really, really stiff and boring. Mm-hmm. I think these songs on our last few albums, especially last three, are pretty fresh sounding, and that's why I'm not nervous about people hearing it.
Right.
I really just want people to hear it, as opposed to, oh, I'm getting nervous. I just want it to be out already.
Right. And when you're making a Danko Jones album, will you limit yourself to what you're listening to so you're not influenced by other artists?
No, not at all. I mean, that's the whole point of the game. Rock is an old kind of music. Its discography is pretty vast. And to think that you're going to come up with something that no one else has come up with is, right. is insane. So no, not at all. I mean, if we have songs on this album that I can actually name you the songs and the riffs that
we're inspired by.
Influenced by. Yeah, nice. Absolutely. I mean, the cool. song Dance, Dance, Dance is kind of the first official single off the record with a mm-hmm. real video as opposed to just some found footage stuff with a real director behind it. And that song, the main guitar riff is from Nasty Dogs and Funky Kings by ZZ Top, or at least a play on it. And the vocals are a play on War Pigs by Black Sabbath.
Interesting. How much does social media play into your day to day?
Oh, I'm on Instagram. I have 4 accounts, and Twitter. I'm on Twitter every day, but I'm not as active as I used to be. But Instagram is a great place and I think it's really the most popular. But I'm not on Facebook. The band is on Facebook, but I personally am not.
Why is that?
So I have a Facebook account, but it's only used if, you know, they say, oh, can you write something about this thing that's happening? Or
right.
And then I'll just go in and I'll be able to do it quickly. But I'm not on Facebook personally. Instagram, I've got 4 accounts.
Right.
And those are all public. And yeah.
Danko, when I mentioned that you're, you know, coming on to be a guest, there's a lot of Danko Jones fan questions I want to burn through here. Brian is curious, what are you currently binge watching?
My algorithms on Netflix are weird. I like Terrace House. Netflix, which is a Japanese reality show.
Okay.
That's what I watch. Like, that's my favorite show, period.
Okay.
I watch that on tour. I mean, if you look over my shoulder, I'm probably watching Terrace House. So that's what I'm binge watching.
Sarah wants to know, she goes, love that you're politically outspoken. Would you ever run for office?
No, that's how we got into this fucking mess in the first place. These yahoos who have no experience are running the world. No, of course not. But it doesn't, you know, it doesn't mean I can't, you know, vent how I feel. But what I have done is, the tendency was to, I've kept it regional now. So I'm just talking about our premier in Ontario mainly, who's I think he's a goof. Doug Ford is a total nitwit. So I limit it to tweets about that or posts about Doug Ford and whatever he's doing.
Steve wants to know an impossible question: which bands are in your top 5
of all time, or just current listens?
That was the question. I don't probably all time.
Top 5 bands of, I guess, of all time. I'm in no order. I suppose it would be Kiss, Sabbath, Beastie Boys, Metallica, and probably something I'm missing. I don't know, Misfits or Thin Lizzy or something like that.
Right, just so
I'm sure I'm missing something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mike writes, "Who is your favorite superhero and your favorite superhero movie?"
Oh, that's a good question. My favorite superhero, I have a few.
Right.
So it's probably like, growing up, it was always Wolverine.
Yeah, same. But, Wolverine, Spider-Man for me.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Wolverine for me more.
Like the X-Men, dude. How good, that was the comic for me that really pulled me in. Like,
absolutely, I agree.
Present day, love that series.
Yeah, same here. I really do. But I liked Silver Surfer. I like Silver Surfer, Iron Fist, Power Man. Those kinds of heroes.
Yeah. What did you think of the? I think they did an Iron Fist.
Netflix TV show. I haven't. It was okay. I haven't watched it yet. I haven't watched Luke Cage or Iron Fist yet.
Yeah, they were both okay. And then they did the Defenders, which was Iron Man or Iron Fist, Power Man. What is it? Daredevil. Jessica Jones. That was all right again.
Yeah, but growing up, I thought Submariner was part of the Defenders as well, and wasn't Thing for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, I could be wrong, but I think they just took, or was it the Hulk? It was one of those two dudes who was in the Defenders as well, I think.
And what do you think for superhero movies? What's been your favorite?
My favorite is Black Panther.
Yeah, such a good movie, man.
That was definitely, I like a lot of them, and I like the Spider-Man multiverse one. I thought that was incredible.
The animated one.
Yeah, the animated one, yeah.
Yeah, so dude, so good. And they're thinking of making a sequel or whatever to the Spider-Verse.
Right.
That's what I've
heard. And the first Spider-Man with Kirsten Dunst.
Oh, yeah.
And Tobey Maguire, is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that, when that came out, you know, now we're so numb to the idea of live action superheroes, Marvel superheroes. But when that first came out, I thought that was a marked difference from the superhero shows and movies I had grown up with. Like, it was way different than like Batman or Captain America on TV. It was or even Spider-Man, the TV show, that the live action TV show they had. I think it lasted for one or two seasons.
I do remember that too. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the Tobey Maguire movie, the first one, I was blown away.
Yeah, yeah. I find that now with like the Avengers and Endgame and everything, it's just, you know, you got like 70 characters and like what's next, guys? Suddenly, you want me now to watch just a Hulk movie? Really?
Well, I love that there's so many, like Doctor Strange with Spider-Man. I don't know if they put in Daredevil in that.
They didn't.
In that movie.
No.
They didn't, right? Yeah, no, so that kind of... But I will say, the one thing that's irked me through the whole arc of the Marvel movie universe is the fact that they didn't dress Hawkeye up in the Marvel costume.
Right.
They made their own kind of cheap, easy to wear Hawkeye uniform, and to me, he doesn't look like a superhero. He looks like some sort of like dark gymnast, and so I never bought the Hawkeye, and I don't buy him as a superhero either.
No,
what's his name? Jeremy? I don't know.
Oh, Renner. Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't find he's like Hawkeye. He's not Hawkeye. So that's you know, that when I saw that, I'm like, I don't know, I'm not buying this, because Captain America looks like Captain America. And, you know, there's certain superheroes that look the part. Even Vision, they did a good job at.
Oh, Vision was awesome.
Yeah, but I just thought, like, Hawkeye's just in this what is it, a wetsuit? Like he's going scuba diving. This is terrible, guys.
I know, right? Oh, man. Which superpower would you want to have?
The one that lets me win endless amounts of money.
Right.
No, I think if any superhero's powers, I mean, I don't know, that's hard. Flying is great. That would be...
Flying would be cool. Awesome. I always thought, you know, Nightcrawler, teleportation would be awesome.
Yeah, that was good. And they did a good job of him, too, in the movies.
Yeah, totally. Awesome. Yeah. Jared writes, what did you think of the Motley Crue movie?
I loved it. I tweeted the hell out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I did a Motley Crue movie when I was 11. It was called Motley Crue.
Oh, no way, really?
And that's yeah, cool. It's up on YouTube.
Okay.
And it's a minute and a half, and we posted it a few years back, and so when the Motley Crue movie came out, I reposted it, or I posted clips from it, and there's a few websites that wrote stories about it and said it was better than The Dirt. But it's an animated movie about Motley Crue that I did when I was 11.
Dude, that's awesome, man. I did a little bit of a music project on Motley Crue, probably around the same time, too, like grade 5, grade 6, a bunch of pictures and shit. I never did a video, but, man, sounds like we were Motley Crue kids growing up.
Yeah, well, I totally forgot I did it. It was like in a on a reel in a box at my parents' place, and I was actually on Nikki Sixx's show in L.A. once, and they were talking to me about, you know, Motley Crue, and then the thought just came to me right there in the studio, and I said, you know, I actually did a movie about Motley Crue when I was 11. And so after that trip, I went back home, dug up the reel, and had it digitized, and we posted it on YouTube.
Well, man, I'm going to have to check that out. That's cool.
It's called, well, the way they posted it, they call it's called Motley Crue by Danko Jones.
Okay.
So if you do a YouTube search, Motley Crue by Danko Jones, you'll see it.
Cool, cool. Do you believe that aliens have visited Earth?
Yeah, sure.
Like, why not? We can't. Yeah, we can't possibly be the only life form.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on legalized marijuana?
I'm for the legalization of marijuana, but I also feel that there should be education to go along with that. It's not. I feel it's not supposed to be used as like something to enhance a Friday night party. It should be given the respect that it asks for. So if you're going to smoke pot, there should be a little bit of reverence and respect given to it. It's not just something that you use to get high and, you know, party it up. I think there's got to be a different approach to it because it's medicinal as well. You know, it helps people with mm-hmm. various ailments, whether it's mental or physical. And, you know, I totally am for the usage of it for that. But, like, you know, just partying it up on a Friday night with your friends is fine. But if there's any way we can kind of infuse a little bit of reverence with it, then maybe we can, then it won't get out of hand is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Two more questions, man. And thank you again for being a guest here today.
Sure.
An oddball question. Have you ever had a near-death experience? And not necessarily where you're floating over your, you know, your bed and seeing, walking to the light kind of thing, more like, whoa, man, I could have died there.
I think we all have, where we've all walked away from something and said, whoa, dude, we could have, mm-hmm. it could have gone really bad. But nothing where, you know, I can,
nothing super
I can talk
out.
About at length.
Yeah.
No, nothing that stands out or, nothing stands out. But, you know, we've all said that. You know, I'm sure all of us have said that.
Right, that's why I ask. Dude, some of the stuff that comes up.
Nothing where it's just been like, oh, I have this story to tell you. Come close. Okay. You know, listen Fair to enough. My tale.
All right. This will be the toughest, or I think it should be the toughest for you. What's been your career highlight thus far?
I don't know. There's been a few. Obviously, the first ones that come to mind is, you know, playing with the Rolling Stones in Toronto
for
a gig, and we were asked to play, and apparently it came from the Stones. When I found out more about it, I've heard two different versions. I've heard a few stories about the show in regards to us. So. My roommate, and that's a long story, but my roommate gave Mick Jagger a copy of our album like a couple of months before the gig for his birthday when the Stones were in Toronto, and there was a Mick Jagger birthday party. My roommate at the time got in, and he gave Mick a copy of our album called Born a Lion. Then I heard that, and that was straight from my roommate. My roommate told me.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that was true. And then I was at a club once, walking into this like restaurant club to meet a friend, and the bouncer took me aside and he said, you know, I did security for the Stones when they were here for 40 Licks, and Ron Wood listened to your album every day. So that was a story I wasn't expecting that night. And then I was in Belgium doing press. This is going back 2006, so it's going back a few years.
Mm-hmm.
But I did an interview with a journalist who said that he asked Keith Richards, he did an interview with Keith Richards and asked him who were his favorite opening bands on the 40 Licks tour, because that's when he interviewed Keith after the 40 Licks tour. And Keith Richards said, "The White Stripes and Us." And I asked the journalist, "Did you record that?" And he said, "Yes." And I'm still waiting for, he promised he'd give me a recording of the interview. And I've actually since talked to him.
Right.
And I asked him last time I talked to him if he had the recording. And he said, "Oh, I couldn't find it," or "he didn't have it," or "he forgot," or something. So I'm still waiting on that interview with Keith Richards and him.
13 years later, yeah.
I really want that clip.
Dude, are you kidding me? Like, what?
Yeah. There's been a few really cool things like that over the years where Angus Young mentioned us in an interview, and that's a story unto itself. This guy was at our shows in, where was it? Ireland. So we played, we played in Holland. This is going back 2002. And then the same guy showed up in Ireland. And he claimed to be Angus Young's nephew. His aunt was married to Angus Young. And afterwards we found out that indeed Angus Young is married to a Dutch woman. So that checked out. But then a few years back, Angus Young and what's his name? Cliff Richard? Cliff William was doing they were doing an interview, and they asked Angus who any new bands, and he mentioned us. So that's when I realized, yeah, that was his nephew. That really was him, because the guy said that he asked his uncle to teach him how to play Sound of Love.
What?
One of our songs, and so Angus showed him how to play Sound of Love. And I was like, is this guy for real? And everything he said checked out. And then when Angus name dropped us out of the blue in this interview, I was like, wow, that guy was Angus Young's nephew. And so that was really cool too. Yeah. Those are two of the cool things. I know that didn't really answer your question, but it's definitely, there's been other things that have happened to us over the years that I'm just like, whoa, that's off the old checklist. But it's usually, you know, people I meet that you know, I grew up, you know, loving.
Yeah, no, fair enough. That's cool, man. Well, thank you again for your time today, Danko. Your band's social media accounts are simply at Danko Jones, pretty easy to find.
And of course, Instagram is Danko_Jones.
Oh, is it? Oh, sorry. Okay.
Yeah, and at Danko Jones is Twitter.
And of course, easy to find on Facebook.
Yeah.
We're all looking forward to A Rock Supreme coming out on Friday, April 26th. I guess until then, we'll see you online.
Okay.